You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber-supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well. This movie review also comes for subscribers at Time Lord level or above, an uncut, unedited, longer video version of the review. Become a subscriber and check it out.
You know, guys, I gotta say, I love this. Man, I really did. I love the remodeled haunted house. I love the gorgeous couple. I love that she sings stuff. He's denying that anything's wrong because she's the crazy one. I love that it's a troubled marriage. There's the old artifact that's found that gives clues to what's going on. There's this spooky shit happening in the bathroom. The piece of jewelry tied to the dead woman. The hippie BFF. The studly husband. And the gorgeous blonde leading lady with those eyes. Oh, my God. But enough about what lies beneath. We are here talking about things seen and heard. Sorry, things heard and seen. It's a new Netflix horror film. I mean, like, it really matters at this point.
Isn't that just things?
It's just things. It's just things. I saw some things. I heard some things. I didn't like any of the things I heard or saw. Anyways, yeah, it is a new Netflix movie starring Amanda Seyfried and James Norton. She is a former artist who moves with her college professor husband, who I guess is art history?
Yeah, art history.
I guess, yeah. I think that was his thing. Yeah, they moved to some little town in upstate New York in early 1980. He is going to be a visiting professor, or he's a new professor, something. He's going to be teaching there. And she starts to renovate this old house that they've moved into. And she starts peeling away, like, some of the history of it. And what do you know? Shit starts to happen. Spooky shit. A lot of it. And none of it's really that interesting. Anyways, my name is Frank. And with me on this review, I have got Melina.
Hello. Woo.
And Bradley of Martin.
Hello.
Got to add some scares.
Yeah. Well, that's way more scary than anything in this movie, Bradley. Oh, my God. Jeez. You should have written this.
I thought the kitchen sink bit was disturbing, to say the least. Maybe a little comical if, yeah. Gross in that.
Gross. And I was eating a turkey burger during that scene.
Oh, so, big mistake.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Well, I didn't see it. I didn't know it was coming out. But anyway, what did you guys think of this?
You know, I've got to say, you know, I think you described the opening bit perfectly, but you make it sound as if that is the entirety of the film. What you just described is probably the first 10 minutes, if that. And that was all fine. I enjoyed that setup because I thought that that was the setup. Only to realize that in this 2-hour freaking movie, I think about an hour and 35 minutes of it was set up. It doesn't even really feel like the actual plot and what they really want to, and what they really were leading to happens until the last 30 minutes. And once it does, I'm like, okay, guys, I really don't care. Do whatever you want to do. Just please wrap this shit up.
I had a hard time believing they were a happy couple before they insisted that they were a happy couple. Because he seems very... I admit, it is very hard to write a clever liar and get away with it. This guy's so bad at lying. He's the kind of liar where if three people are talking to him and one said, "How tall are you?" He'd be like, "I'm 5'8". And if the other person said, "I thought you told me earlier you were 6 foot even." And then he'd turn to that person and say, "I am." And that's about the extent of his skill with the silver tongue. So it was like a chore listening to him talk, and I think the actor's great in a lot of stuff. James Norton,
he actually plays it pretty well, though. You know, like, he plays it consistent, but it is that kind of school of, like, lying, though. Like, well, if I believe it, they're gonna believe it too.
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting my long-winded.
He's from the school of lying where if someone catches you in a lie, you smile while laughing and backing away with your hands behind your back. And I'm like, yeah, that's convincing. Maybe it worked for the Three Stooges.
this is not like What Lies Beneath, because Amanda, she's not the lead. Like, Michelle Pfeiffer was the lead of that movie. Amanda is not the lead of this movie. She's a secondary character. And I think that sucks, because I was really excited to see a haunted house film starring Amanda Seyfried, not featuring Amanda Seyfried with George Clare, who the story is more about, until, as you put it, Melina, the last 20 minutes.
Yeah. And it's a shame, because I think that if this movie does anything right, is that it shows, you know, think about horror movies like this, like haunted house movies, it really depends on, it's less reliant on dialogue and more a person's just presence. And I think she continuously proves, especially in this film, just how much her of a presence she is and how magnetic of a, you know, of a presence she is to watch. But you're right. It's a shame that she is relegated to just, you know, glass of wine and, you know, like, oh my God, what is that sound? Type stuff.
Yeah, which is weird, because the movie definitely, I mean, I would say that the trailer and the poster fool you, but the movie I think really does fool you too, to where it starts out firmly establishing her as the character that we're supposed to be following, right down to the fact that she's suffering from an eating disorder. She clearly is none too pleased about the fact that they have to move out to the middle of pretty much bumfuck nowhere. And she's trying to be supportive about it. She's got, you know, they have a daughter that they share together. She is a successful artist and art restorer, which, you know, unless you're George O'Keefe, it pretty much is imperative that you live in a city for that to work. But then, yeah, it's when they, over time, just kind of slowly start pushing her to the back burner that the film started to feel a little strange. And I think uneven, you know, I feel like it forgot to make her a character that we were supposed to relate to and follow. Instead, I think it flipped the table to where we were just focusing on him instead. And I think it just kind of ended up kind of forgetting about her.
Which I think would have been, I mean, I wouldn't have a problem with that, because I don't care about likability. I've said that so many times, but I think following a villain, I have no problem with, but this guy's so boring. I mean, he's so colorless. He is so like, he is so 2D. I don't want to follow him. There's nothing about him that's worth, you know, really exploring. Okay, yeah, you're a liar. You know, you're not a nice guy. You've done some really shitty things. Okay.
Everybody else keeps uncovering the truth about him. Well, Amanda Seyfried is like, what's going on with my husband? Everybody knows but you. How is that even possible? You're supposed to be the star of this movie, Netflix. I'm very upset about that. I love watching her perform, and she's just, her reactions, I think, are amazing to the spookiness, because personally, I thought the house was beautiful, so I didn't get a creepy vibe from it at all.
I love old buildings and old homes. I really, really do. And so that house is really nice. Yeah. And it does, like you said, it does have really good bones. I mean, presumably. And it's a shame they didn't do more with it. As for a haunted house story, they didn't do that much with it. It's so much of goings on in the college and in the lake. And
I think that this movie, there were several times throughout where I felt like it was trying to follow in the footsteps of a lot of horror movies that have come out lately, horror movies and horror miniseries and TV shows, to where they play with the supernatural basically to serve as a metaphor for some kind of social issue, whether it's, you know, a relationship, whether it's a race, like whether it's to do with abuse. And I feel like this is trying to do the same thing, where it's actually trying to make a metaphor about a marriage and one that's not altogether healthy. And I think that it forgot to use the supernatural in a way that felt like it was serving or adding to that. Every time they went back to the supernatural aspect, I was like, this just doesn't even really feel like it should be here. It's not fleshed out in a way that feels like it connects to what these people are going through. And that one scene that you were talking about, Bradley, with the kitchen sink, you know, that was easily the first and only scene in the entire movie that came even close to getting a reaction out of me, to where it raised my temperature at all. Maybe that was just because I just got the COVID shot. I don't know. but other than that, why was that scene even in there? It had nothing to do with anything.
It's so weird. And it's never talked about again. Never explained again. Never mentioned ever again. Yeah, I think Bradley and I reviewed another movie recently. What was it called, Bradley? The one that we didn't like? Separation. That's what it was. Yeah. And that movie suffered from the same thing this movie does, is that it doesn't know how to handle horror. It designs like supernatural scary sequences and then just, you know, sprinkles them throughout, but doesn't really have like a through line to connect them. And that's what this movie does. I can only imagine there were so many happenings here, especially I think the last like half hour, 20 minutes are so jam packed. I kind of wished that this might have been like a 4-part miniseries, and I hate saying that when a movie should be something and vice versa. I think it kind of should be. At the same time, I kind of glad it's not, because I just think that that's more for them to not get right. You know, that's just like a longer like span of time for them to just mess things up on. Is there anything you guys did like about this?
I would say that, like you guys, I thought that Amanda Seyfried, I mean, she just came off of Mank, which, you know, love that movie, hate that movie. She gave a bit. Oh, yeah. So you're that guy, by the way. Unless
I'm that guy.
For those of
I'm
you who aren't guy. Time lords. Yeah. For those of you who aren't time lords, Frank is very enthusiastically raising his hand. So, but, you know, it's a great performance. And I think that with a movie like that, she proved that she is that caliber of actress who can handle really serious stuff like that. Like Rachel McAdams, she has proven that she can graduate beyond the Mean Girls fame. Unfortunately, there's a point where I was like, this movie has so little for you to do. You know, your reactions just are like, okay, yeah, here's another scene of her being mad and her just telling her husband off, and I'm getting really sick of you not doing anything about it except going and sleeping in your damn daughter's room. I'm like, why don't you have any scene where it feels like you're willing to have a confrontation with your husband or talk to him about what's been going on? There is one scene in here that I thought just perfectly solidified the dynamic between the two of them, where she finds this book that's got this history about the house, and she immediately runs upstairs and she tries to wake him up, and she's like, honey, listen, I just found this. You gotta listen to me. And he goes, I'm asleep. And then she's like, oh, okay. And walks away. And I was like, okay, why don't you behave like a real, like any human being would? Wake his ass up and say, like, girl, like, as they say, wear those ovaries on the outside, all right?
She does need to grow a pair.
I liked the performance she had with the stable hand who's tied to the house. I'm not sure if stable hand's even the right occupation for him.
I think he's
well,
Skeet Ulrich Jr.
Alex Neustetter, actually.
Alex Neustetter. So I like the relationship those two had. It got a little spicy, and I thought, oh, here we go. Get that affair, which I don't condone. I think you should separate first if you're going to be exploring your sexuality with other people. But also, this is a film, so get it, Amanda Seyfried. This could get pretty good. But nothing comes of it, even though they have such a beautiful chemistry together.
Yeah, it's so funny.
You didn't think so?
Well, I think they had better chemistry than
her husband.
James Gordon and Natalia Dyer.
Oh, yeah.
Natalia Dyer, who plays like this wannabe goth chick.
Okay, I have a question about that. So the husband's all like, your new friend, she's a closet lesbian. And I thought, is this a period piece in which this would be like a kind of a scary insult or like an out?
Well, yeah, it was 1980.
Okay.
It was 1980. Which also, because it's so funny that, because the time period was sort of, it's so funny what you're talking about, Melina, your character qualms with her. It's so glaring. They're all right. They're all valid. But they're so glaring because this is the era of the ERA. This was when they were really, when feminism was like such a hot button, like it was thriving, the National Women's Conference and all that. And she's so like, she never grows a pair. I've said it before, but yeah, I mean it. She never really takes charge of what is wrong in her life and in her marriage. And that is just really frustrating. And this takes place in 1980. You can tell if this couple stayed together that they would have been totally that 80s Reagan couple, you know, drinking each other under the table and philandering left and right.
But she isn't given opportunity to explore exactly what you and Melina are asking her to. No, she is, though, in the script. She just doesn't. And I'm so confused about that because Amanda would have knocked it out of the park.
And I think 2 points on the whole this taking place in 1980, because right off the bat, I was kind of curious as to why they did that. And then I realized that this was based on a book and I thought, oh, well, it's probably just because the book was set in 1980. And I don't know whether it is or not. I've not read it. But watching this, I thought I had plenty of time because, my God, this movie felt long. I had plenty of time to sit. I sat there and ruminated on it, and I was like, there's really no reason for this to take place in 1980. It doesn't lend itself, the time period does not lend itself in any relevant way to the plot or the character situations. And then it dawned on me, I was like, the reason that this is set in 1980 is so that they don't have to have the scene where someone pulls out their cell phone and says, oh my God, I'm not getting any signal.
Which, you know, people are being called out on that. I reviewed a movie on here, Breaking News in Yuba County. And one of the criticisms that was tossed over was like, we don't see any cell phone. Where's the social media presence? And that can seem like a little bit of a throwaway thing, but it is such a huge part of the way we live now that I can see that being a reason enough for them to do it, because there is really no other reason for it. And I kind of like that there's no, that presence isn't there, you know, and so I don't really mind it. But you also need to do, you know, you need to do a little bit of more homework, and, you know, you can't just do 1980 just say it is and throw some old clothes on and call it a day, you know. But yeah, anyway, why don't we go ahead and run into our wrap up into our final thoughts, because yeah. Melina, why don't you get us started?
Okay, well, like I said, I liked the beginning of this because I thought that they did a pretty good job of setting it up to where it's like, okay, here's the characters, here's their situation, here's the reason for them to be in this house that we know inevitably right off the bat is going to be haunted. Unfortunately, like I said, this movie is 2 hours long. It's an hour and 30 minutes worth of setup. It's not until the last, maybe even 20 minutes, because I'm sure that 10 minutes of that was the credits, that it really feels like it's ramping up towards anything that resembles a plot. After an hour and 30 minutes of this, I'm like, okay, at this point, the characters aren't that interesting. Your villain's not that interesting. Your main actress, she's not interesting. She makes decisions that, I'm sorry, this may have been the 1980s, but I've seen plenty of films set in the 1970s and 80s where women acted a hell of a lot more forthright and clever than this woman does. It's things like that. It's the classic problem of people making stupid decisions for the sake of the plot going where it is inevitably going to go. And I gotta say, there was not a single moment of this film that I thought was creepy or had anything near a decent atmosphere, except for one thing that, again, just felt like it didn't need to be there at all. And then it just builds to such an utterly laughable moment that I was like, you know what? I think I'm actually going to give this a slightly higher rating, just because I think if you can get drunk and watch this with some friends just to laugh at it, you might actually find that you there's quite a few hilarious moments in here, especially towards the end. I could not stop laughing. So, man, I'm going to give this 2 out of 10 apology letters that need to be written to Thomas Cole's estate.
Bradley.
All right. It's fine. There's lots of people that like haunted house stories that aren't scary, and I respect those people. You know, being afraid isn't for everyone.
I was going to say, it's cute that you like this movie.
Yeah. Me, 20 minutes in, I'm like, okay, these characters have lost me. I'm going to admire this house. Ooh, look at that kitchen. Oh, I like that old-timey sink. Look where they put the spice rack. Amy, look where they put the spice rack. I also hate it when there's parents in a film, but they're not parents. That kid is just being used as a prop for, I don't even know what for, a generational thing. I think it was trying to
show that they breed.
I think it's so that she doesn't have a reason to leave within the first 15 minutes.
Okay. Yeah. Pretty clever. Good job, script. But the payoff in this, are we even calling it a payoff? I'm not even sure what to call it.
I'm still waiting for it.
I had to rewind it because I thought I must have missed something. And then I watched it again and I'm thinking.
You watched it again?
Yeah, I rewatched the last 5 minutes because I was trying to figure out what the point of that was. And I'm thinking, maybe I just don't understand this because I'm not a woman? Because it sounds like an empowering ending the way the dialogue's being spoken, but I feel that this is a really shitty ending. I'm going to give it 4 kitchen sinks that they left in the writing room out of 10.
This could have been interesting. This could have been nice and spooky. You know, I like the directors. The directors are Robert Pulsini and Sherry Springer Berman, or husband and wife team, and they've actually done some good work. I think their best work is the 2011 film Cinema Verite.
Oh, which was I liked that movie.
Yeah. True story. Did you see that? Yeah. For you guys that don't know, it's about the first family that was ever broadcast on national television as a reality show. This is back in like the early or the mid 70s, and this is the film. And this is family. It was like a 8-part episode series that aired on PBS, and this is the movie about the making of that series and how it affected the family and how it changed television in a lot of ways. It's a really great film. This is not. So I'm really sorry to see that the mighty have fallen, but I know that they'll bounce back. They've got the talent. I love the cinematography. I think Larry Smith, who did this, who did Eyes Wide Shut and Only God Forgives, it looks beautiful. It looks like it's going to be scary. Like, it's got a great sense of place. It all works. It's just not scary. The script is not there. I have not read Elizabeth Brundage's book, All Things Cease to Appear, but I can, you know, only imagine it went a little bit further. It had to, because the book had good reviews. This will not be getting a good review, at least not from us. It's just not scary. All the horror feels inserted awkwardly. The characters do things that make them really either annoying or stupid. I don't know who this is for. I don't know who I would recommend this to. And it makes me sad. Amanda Seyfried is on a roll right now. She just had arguably a career high with Mank. You know, this isn't her Norbit. This'll be forgotten about, and she will continue to do good things because she is capable of good things. But until then, I'm going to give this 5 out of 10 Michael O'Keefe's, because Michael O'Keefe is a really, really great actor who I love, love, love. I kind of have a daddy crush on him. And he's in this as the sheriff, and it's always good to see him. So yeah, if nothing else, check it out for Michael O'Keefe and the great cinematography. But that's it.
There's a couple of great people who show up in here. Karen Allen shows up. Yeah.
Karen Allen.
And then
Karen
F. Murray Abraham. Shows up. Who shows up here? Always great to see that guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've always loved him since. Yeah, I mean, I've always loved him since Amadeus, and I feel like he hit his career high, unfortunately, with Amadeus, where I was like, man, you really haven't done anything great since, at least not in a leading role.
He did Last Action Hero. Come on, wasn't he a Last Action Hero, or did I make that up?
No, oh, I don't know. I haven't seen that since I was 5.
I just added myself as a Last Action Hero fan, and on that note, goodbye, kids.